Hello, everybody. It is August 25th, 2020. This is episode 58 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Sean. How's it going today, Sean?
Oh, doing pretty well. You know, I was absent last week, and I feel like it's been about 84 years since I've been on, so I'm eager to get back into some hockey talk.
Yeah, I really missed you on that episode. It got a little weird without you.
you got serious. I gotta bring some hot takes back. Bring the tone down a bit.
Yeah, we gotta kind of get back into the groove here. It's been a weird first round. Lots of storylines. I kind of mentioned some of the weirdness last week. One thing that I forgot to mention, though, was the return of Oscar Lindblom to the Philadelphia Flyers. As soon as I published that episode, I was like, oh, I should have mentioned that's kind of one of those cool moments that, again, was kind of bigger than the game, is someone defeating cancer and coming back. And
in the same season, even.
Yeah, and even being remotely close to playing hockey again is just so impressive. So
yeah, such like a cool little story for the Flyers to rally around.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to start off here, we could actually talk about the rounds now that you're back.
Right, yeah.
Now that they're all over.
Yeah, they're really rapid firing through these here. So like we're already well into the second round.
Yeah, so we didn't even have enough time to do one game in predictions later in this episode, let's start off with the Western Conference in the first round, official round. Dallas and Calgary. This is one of those ones that we had different predictions in.
Yeah.
So how do you think that the series? Why do you think the series ended it the way that it did?
So I think the loss of Matthew Tkachuk was absolutely detrimental to the Flames' performance in that series. He's very clearly the momentum swinger. He's the energy. He's the life and blood of that team. And only having him for two games in that series, it's hard for the Flames to rally around anything when he's not on the ice, causing disturbances and getting momentum and that game management he's so good at.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it in another episode. He's kind of the lifeblood of that team. So to have kind of your heart ripped out, it's really tough to come back from that. And just the offense that he generates on that team, and you know, he's on the power play, goes in front of the net, he's super important to that team. So I think you nailed it there, that having him out was just huge. It's just a huge loss that they couldn't really fill. And even with the, you know, the bottom six performing as well as they did, you got to have that top six production. It was just really hard for them to replace it. And Dallas had some young players step up on the other side of things.
Big time.
We had Denis Gurianov, Miro Heiskanen. Rupe Hintz was playing that physical game.
Yeah, he might not be like a score sheet guy, but he's definitely a physically engaged player, so it's easy for him to kind of make an impact just by playing and being an energy provider.
Yeah. I think I sent you a text during one of the games that Denis Gurianov was having the type of series that Tyler Seguin should be having.
That was exactly it.
Just the amount of goals he was having and just the shots that he was taking, he was just on fire.
Yeah, he had six goals in six games during that series, I believe. I mean, four of them were in the last game, but he was still an impact player throughout the whole thing.
And I think they kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. I know he had a lot of points in the AHL, but he's kind of been up and down throughout the lineup and kind of secured his spot a bit with Dallas this year. And then you had, you know, the veterans like even Corey Perry and Joe Pavelski.
Pavelski had a monster series.
Yeah, they
he
stepped
was huge,
up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that you know, the horseshit line didn't do as much as some of those other players. I mean, they're still there and impacted the game, but just not as much as you might think.
And this is kind of where like the stars of the past have had trouble, is like once that top line stops doing stuff, they didn't really have the team to make up for it. And now they have, I mean, Miro Heiskanen is the driver of everything on that team right now. He had 8 points in that series, I think. Played 27 minutes a game. He is absolutely going to be one of, if not the best defenseman in the league right away.
Yeah, I told you that if Dallas wins the cup, like I predicted from the beginning of this season, I would get a Heiskanen jersey, but I'm thinking about just getting one
no matter what. Yeah.
Because it's just amazing.
No, that's absolutely
so
fair.
I might have to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anything else on Calgary that you think you can point to see or to say why they might not have prevailed in this?
No, I mean, ultimately, the game that they lost because of their goaltending. But the goaltending was not the problem throughout the series. Cam Talbot actually did pretty well the whole time. He just had that one bad game and that one really bad scenario, and they couldn't come back from his whatever implosion that was.
Yeah, definitely can't pin the whole series on him. He played really well. That being said, do you think that there's going to be some major changes coming in Calgary? Johnny Gaudreau's kind of in the news.
Yeah, there has to be. I mean, I put this out on social media earlier today. Did the Flames keep or trade Gaudreau? And most of the talk is that people would suggest him to be traded. And that's where most of the talk is out of the media as well. He's had two disappointing playoffs now in a row, and he's kind of not shown that he can be the guy on a team. That he might be better on a complimentary role with someone else who's kind of the main guy there. But at some point, they've got a really good roster there, and at some point they're going to need something to put them over the top, and they're not going to get that just by staying stagnant year after year.
Yeah, I think they got to do something. You can't, like, even if Tkachuk is the heart and soul of that team, just losing one player isn't a good enough reason to lose a playoff series. Like, if your team is built in that way where if one guy goes down, you're dead, that's not how you make it in the league, because then that player gets hurt and you're done.
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
If you look at Winnipeg, they had two out of their top six go out, but they also had defensemen, bottom six guys go out. So at that point, I think it becomes more of a legitimate reason to not win a round, because your team's just decimated by injuries and you kind of already lack the depth to begin with. But if you look at teams that have won the cup recently, like for St. Louis, I'm not sure if they had any huge injuries in the finals, but
if they were, I think they were playing through them.
Washington missed Nicklas Backstrom for a number of games on their way to the cup. He's a huge player for them. The Penguins had like zero defense for the first cup that they won in 2016. There's good teams find a way to get past that. So, and Calgary has kind of overreacted in the past where they've shipped some people out because of something like this. So
I think there's something going to happen.
I'm sure as an Edmonton fan, you're willing to accept a total blow up of Calgary.
I'll just sit up here and like to grab my popcorn and watch. Could be fun. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see.
At least it's not my team for once.
Yeah. So I picked Dallas in six in that one. I think you picked Calgary in seven.
Yep.
Yeah. So ended up being what? Was it Dallas in?
Dallas in six.
Okay. So I got that one right on the money.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll move on to Colorado and Arizona.
When do I start laughing?
This was basically as close as you can get to a sweep without it being an actual sweep.
Yeah.
I think the last two games should basically make it count as a sweep.
That's fair.
I mean, the Coyotes held their own. They were without their leading point scorer, Schmaltz. Got knocked out in the round robin. No, not the round robin.
Play-in.
Was it the play-in? Because it was against the Vegas Golden Knights, right?
Oh, the Vegas? That would have been like like the exhibition game.
Oh, the exhibition. Yeah, it was an exhibition because Rand Reeves hit him. So they're without him, but it's just all Colorado.
Yeah. The Coyotes...
It's their offense.
Yeah, like the Coyotes better be changing that howl of theirs to a damaged whimper, because they had 8 goals in 5 games and 106 shots over 5 games. That's 21.6 per game. Like that is atrocious numbers.
Yeah, what was it? The one game that you sent me a message, they had like single digit shots halfway through the game.
Yeah, yeah, it was like 7 or 8 shots over halfway in.
I think there was a game where they had like 15 total.
I wouldn't be surprised. They just overwhelmed them.
I didn't watch enough of that series to know if they were just absolutely shut down or if they just had nothing going.
Listen, like, the Avs are a high flying, high powered team, so. Either the Avs are better at defense than we thought, or that like offense is the best defense is apparently a thing now.
Yeah, I think that the Colorado defense is probably a little bit underrated. They've got, you know, some solid guys in there. Eric Johnson, Makar,
Zadorov,
Ryan Graves, Zadorov. Not sure who their sixth guy is there, but it's a solid defense. And then you've got, offense is your best defense, I guess. If you're playing in the other team's zone and you've got all the possession time, you're not going to get scored on.
Yeah. Special shout out to Nazem Kadri.
Yeah,
they
scored a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, shout out to Leafs fans for watching Kadri just excel in playoffs and being up there in point totals. Yeah. And
not getting suspended.
Yeah, exactly. So if only the Leafs had, a guy like that that could play in front of the net and get dirty.
That's one player type who could have helped them against Columbus, is if they had a Nazem Kadri type on their team. If only.
If only they ever had a guy like that. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, what else do you say about this one? We both had Colorado in six.
Yeah.
Ended up being Colorado in five, I believe. So we're both right on the team there. I mean, kudos to Arizona for stealing one game. Kudos to Darcy Kemper, really, for putting up with his teammates after getting basically like 50 shots a game.
Darcy Kemper is basically that reaction shot of Anton Khudobin when he's just looking around like, what are you doing?
I think the most notable thing to come out of this for Arizona is that Taylor Hall came out and said basically he's all in on winning.
Yeah, yeah, that's his main motivator in where he signs next is winning, contender.
AKA, I want to go to Colorado.
That seems like a very thinly veiled way of saying that to me anyways.
Yeah, it could be the whole NBA, my team got beat by your team, so I'm going to join your team, and then we can win next year. Let's see it, Taylor Hall. Now that you're not a draft lottery expert.
Yeah, they lost out in the wrong round this year. I mean, they could have had the number one overall pick, but no, they had to make the playoffs.
Yeah. So I wonder what they'll do, because now they've kind of got a weird situation with the GM, and very disappointing against Colorado, just kind of really outmatched there. You've got a number of players who underperformed this year. So there could be some interesting moves being made in the off season here, as short as it's going to be. Okay, so we'll move on. So we got Vegas, and it's been a while, so I don't even remember who they played.
Chicago. No, I mean, honestly, this one, there is not much to say about it at all. Vegas took out Chicago in five games. It's a totally unsurprising result. And I mean, I'm pretty sure I had Vegas in five. And
We both did.
Yeah, I think we did. I don't think anybody really figured the Blackhawks were going to put up much of a fight against Vegas. Like, Vegas is just too good. It's too good at shutting down opponents, especially weaker ones like Chicago.
Yeah, Vegas is just nasty right now. They're doing everything right.
Yeah.
They look like a playoff team.
Good timing for that.
And like we said, it's like we said coming into this, is that Chicago beat Edmonton, but Vegas isn't Edmonton. They've got
exactly
a much deeper team. They've got a lot of sound playoff performers. They've got basically two top lines that will always score against you if you make a mistake. They've got some really good two-way guys like Mark Stone,
and that's the key for them. Like, those top two lines of theirs are basically two of the best defensive forward lines in the league, and they can also score. So these guys are all situation. They can absolutely handle Patrick Kane and Dominic Kubalik, and they pretty much did. I mean, Kane had 5 points, but nobody else was really outstanding or stood out at all.
It was pretty one-way series.
I think the main storyline that came out of this one was Robin Leonard overtaking the starting goalie job in Vegas. And that sort of sparked a quite eye-rollingly cringy post from Fleury's agent with like a picture of Fleury in the net with a sword through his back, getting backstabbed by DeBoer. But it's like, no, Leonard's the better goalie right now.
Yeah, there was a bit of a shitstorm about that because people are saying, well, there's no way Fleury wouldn't know that he was going to do this, and so you were saying, well, he wouldn't know. But apparently this agent has done this in the past with other players. He's done it with like Pacioretty, did it with I think like Halak. He's done it with a bunch of guys where he's put it out there for like airing a grievance for a player, and then just taking it down. So the message is out there, and it looks like the player didn't have anything to do with it. And the player can say, like, oh, well, you know, I don't think that way, or, you know, my agent's just trying to do what's best for me. So they look like a good guy, but it's just getting to be pretty predictable here. And like you said, Leonard's the better goalie, so...
Oh, yeah. No, there's no way you don't go with him. And the other thing I saw with that agent is that apparently he asks the player's permission to post it first.
Right, so yeah.
There's that part of it, too, where it's like, did Fleury okay this and then backed off on it? Or, like, did the agent just kind of go off on his own for once and do it? But either way, it was just a really out-of-touch post.
Yeah, I think there was a comment from Fleury, like, from a few years ago saying, like, my agent doesn't say anything without my permission or something. And it's like, okay, well,
yeah.
Then that means that you okayed this. I saw one person on Reddit, I don't remember the username or anything, but they were saying, like, I'm kind of happy that he's this way, because it shows that he is upset about losing the starter job, and he has, like, the fire, and he wants to keep being a starter somewhere. So he's got, like, that competitive edge.
Apparently he's been criticized.
He's been kind of criticized since, I guess, his father passed away for kind of losing that spark and perhaps losing the mental game a bit. So I don't know. You could argue that it's good that he's still so invested in being the guy, but I think it's just a distraction for the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing
totally
is, like,
the wrong message to send.
It is, because he's doing that thing that hockey players don't do, where you put yourself above the team. Ultimately, Leonard's the better goalie right now. He's the one who should be starting, and there's no reason that Fleury, as a member of that team, should be trying to make it about him and not the success of the team he's on.
Yeah, I saw another user that said Dominic Hasek backed up Chris Osgood and didn't complain.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure Marc-Andre Fleury should basically just, you know, be quiet and sit on the bench until you've got your spot. This has happened to him before, where he's been the guy, and then somebody else comes along who's hot, and in playoffs you play the hot goalie,
yep,
unless you're Craig Berube, and then
we'll get to that later.
You know. yeah. So I think it's just a distraction, and it's totally, totally dumb. It just gives the players, like, something to bring them off their game. Although it didn't look like it last night in their game one.
No, not at all.
So we both had that one right.
Yeah.
Any other comments about that series?
No, that was about it. That was more than the coverage that was given to that series while it was happening.
Yeah.
But on the notes of Craig Berube and running the hot goalie.
Yeah, so the last matchup in the West was Vancouver versus St. Louis. So Vancouver ended up winning that in six. And I had Vancouver in five, which was a bit of a meme pick. But
it turned out it worked.
Turned out okay. I think you had St. Louis in six?
In six, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you had the games right, I had the team right, so together...
We're good.
We're good, yeah.
the Clappercast pick was right.
Yeah. Yeah. So Vancouver came out hot, just kind of like I thought. Like, they kind of caught St. Louis a little bit sleepy coming out of that round robin. Took a quick two games. They came out kind of on all cylinders, played their game. And then St. Louis kind of took over for two games after they played, like, a back-to-back, which I thought really favored St. Louis's game, because Vancouver plays that fast, you know, breakout,
yeah,
fast breaks kind of style. And playing the day after you play a game is probably extremely exhausting for that. So St. Louis took over, played their game a bit, and then...
Should we say St. Louis took over or Ryan O'Reilly took over?
Ryan O'Reilly, I think, yeah. And Jake Allen played pretty good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ryan O'Reilly was just insane, though. Like, the stats that you sent over to me and were public or publicized.
Yeah, just the amount of the discrepancy of chances where it's, like, outshooting the Canucks 80 or, like, 80 to 20 or something when O'Reilly's out on the ice. It's just,
yeah,
absurd.
Like, in all situations, it's just,
yeah,
like...
Which is, like, including
500%.
Shorthanded. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean,
he's a dominant player.
Yeah, I'm surprised how out of it St. Louis was for a lot of that. They didn't seem to have a whole lot of energy and they came out flat. And like you said, that's where Vancouver stole the momentum early. That they played a fast game, they took the momentum, they took the game, they took control and dominated.
So they started Binnington in the first couple games. He got beat. Ended up switching up to Jake Allen, and he played really well. I think Jake Allen had about like a 920 or something save
It
percentage
was
in the
920.
playoffs, and Binnington at the time that Allen went in had like a 865, something like that. So he wasn't playing that great. And then when St. Louis was on the cusp of elimination, they went back to Binnington. So I guess the argument there is this is the guy that, was our guy during the regular season. We played him every game for our cup win. They went to him. It was not the right idea. He got shellacked.
Yeah, I mean, blocker side. So, I mean, like, shout out to Vancouver's video crew for finding that one, but that blocker side on Binnington was absolutely detrimental. That's where Vancouver took a lot of momentum. They scored two or three goals in that first game off of that same shot or that same shot selection.
Yeah, we were. I remember we were texting, like, all the goals are going in that blocker side. And
Yeah.
then, what do you know, in the game six, just all blocker side,
Yeah, there was
basically.
something like even Binnington noticed because he switches pads out in the middle of that series.
Wow.
Someone else pointed that out. I think it was probably just on one of the TV broadcasts that Binnington switches pads after game one.
Didn't work.
No, not at all.
Should have used Jake Allen's pads. They
Should have
seemed to
just used
work
Jake
okay.
Allen.
Yeah. Yeah, so he ended up going in after Binnington let up four. Damage was done. They couldn't recover from that. I think it was just a great series for the Canucks. I know it was kind of must have felt like a little bit of revenge because Binnington had commented that he should have won the Calder over Elias Pettersson. So that's kind of a bit of a, comeuppance for that. Vancouver stuck to their game plan. They played the fast game. They took advantage of, some slower starts to St. Louis, and just they didn't get a lot of pressure on Quinn Hughes, and it worked out for the Canucks. We're kind of seeing that, at least in game one of the Vegas versus the Canucks series, is that they're Vegas is playing the body a lot more on those smaller Vancouver players, which I was actually really surprised that St. Louis didn't do. That's how they got to the finals
Well,
and
yeah, it's
ended up
right in
beating
their play
Boston.
style. I was thinking the whole time going in, how is Vancouver's forward core going to match up against punishing defensemen like Pietrangelo and Parayko? But they never really used that side of their game.
The only thing that really happened was Tyler Myers got hurt off of a weird hit into the boards. But aside from that, I think Quinn Hughes probably got hit like single digit times. David Perron was playing that game, but aside
I
from
mean,
that, I
that's
don't
David
think
Perron, though. That's
anyone
just
else.
His style.
There's a couple other guys who were throwing the body around, but overall the team was playing pretty soft and just getting caught on some poor defensive plays, like flat-footed.
Yeah, they were slow.
There's a lot of stretch passes that Vancouver was doing and just catching them. And the special teams. Gotta mention that too. Vancouver's special teams were really good, and Jacob Markstrom as well played an excellent series. We definitely kept them in the game a lot of times. That one save that did you see that one where it went off of the linesman and changed directions?
No, I never saw that one.
St. Louis was dumping the puck in, and it bounced off of the linesman, and it kind of bounced out right into the slot area. And I think it was Jacob Delarose got like a clear shot at Markstrom, and he was able to like fight it off with his blocker. He was going out to like play the puck like it was going to ring around the boards, and he had to like jump back out in front and just fought it off. It was a huge
See,
save.
that's the type of thing that Markstrom is just really good at saving his team in those situations. He can make those random huge saves to give the momentum to his team. Like, I imagine he makes that save and then the rest of the team immediately jumps up and they're able to rally around something and go get a decent chance the other way. Like, he's good
Yeah,
for
I guess the
that.
good thing for him is that he's got a lot of practice doing that because the Canucks give up a lot of stuff
Oh,
like
absolutely.
that. So yeah, I mean that's definitely a bit of a difference maker in that series. So I guess let's move on. I had Vancouver in five. You had St. Louis in six. Yeah. I guess we kind of already mentioned that a bit. So in the West, I picked all the right teams. So I'm pretty pumped about that. I was 4-for-4 in the West. In the East, though.
Better than the analyst. We'll start with the.
Yeah. Well, we'll start with Columbus and Tampa Bay.
I think, even though the series was 4-1, all of Tampa Bay's wins were by one goal, including two overtime games. And I think it was a lot closer than the outcome would suggest, but I think Tampa Bay still won the series and it was deserved. That I don't think Columbus had quite enough to be able to overpower them, but it's not like it was a runaway. It wasn't like a runaway, like a 4-1 series win would suggest.
Yeah, the games were quite close. They had that giant 5 OT game.
They had those three games in one day.
I kind of felt after that one that, like, you lose that on the first game. Yeah. Like, that's going to be hard to come back from just mentally. You kind of figured whoever won that had a pretty clear advantage in the rest of the games. Because they essentially, won three games in one day.
That's basically it. You know, the physical and mental exhaustion after that, and especially how it ended, where the puck just bounces off of Gavrikov's face and then set right up for a shot. Shot and goal by, I think it was, Braden Point.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you play 2 days later, and that's going to be hard on the mental game to just even recover from that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Columbus hung in there, but just didn't have enough, just quite enough. But I think Columbus is... Their franchise is coming along. Like, Tortorella didn't want to answer any questions about, like, the moral victories or anything, but I really think that there is a pretty big silver lining for Columbus, is that they've had a lot of players that have shown that they're franchise-worthy players. I mean, you have, like, Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, Pierre-Luc Dubois had a huge series.
Pierre-Luc Dubois had his kind of emergence. Series. Like... That's kind of the first time he's kind of made the headlines as a player. It was throughout the play-in, especially in the series against Tampa there.
Yep. You have, like, Nick Foligno is probably one of the best captains in the league in terms of leadership, I think. You know, he's got a great skill set. He's probably not the most skilled captain in the league, but I think for a leader, he's really up there.
Yeah.
He says all the right things. I think he and Torts probably work really well together.
He clearly stands up for his teammates. He's got that crazy eyes.
Yeah, for sure. So I think moving forward, I mean, I think this year was huge for Columbus, because last year, you know, they won their first playoff series, but they kind of had that, you know, diaspora of all their talent where everybody left and everyone's like, oh, well, what's going to happen to this team? You know, they're not going to be anywhere close to what they were last year. And then they proved, well, we don't need those guys, you know? So I think that's huge. I think they could attract some more talent to the team if they need to. They can let some of their other players pop up. You had guys like Liam Foudy kind of showed that they're ready to make the jump.
Yeah, Foudy and Texier had another good bunch of games too. And these are some of the few younger, talented players that they have in their system, so it's crucial for them to be able to develop into NHLers.
Yeah, Texier was impressive. I thought he was, like, just an offensive player, but he was matched up against, like, Kucherov, and he was being a pest, like, being defensively good, and a good series for him. And he was good against Toronto as well. Looks like he's developing really well under Tortorella into that style of game. And, like I said, I think there's a real silver lining for Columbus in this. But for Tampa... those overtimes were pretty clutch. Braden Point stepping up.
No, he's stepped up. I want to mention, because last year one of the main criticisms against Tampa was the way their depth was filled out, that it didn't really have much of that grit, much of the physicality, much of the engaged players that are going to swing momentum and help your team perform better. They added Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow, and they are the exact type of players they need in those roles. That both of those players had insanely good series against Columbus there. And, you know, that's kind of addressing one of the main needs that the team had over the last offseason.
Yeah, they're really good fits. And they've had Patrick Maroon in there, too. I know he didn't hit the score sheet as much, but still a good pickup, you know, a cup winner.
Yeah, he's a good locker room guy.
One thing for Tampa is that Stamkos came out today that he's actually left the bubble for medical reasons. So he's basically done.
Nope, I didn't hear that.
So he didn't play. Yeah, he didn't play in any of those games. So that's a big loss for them, even though they're doing well without him. He's, you know, the captain and provides a lot of offense for that team. So that sucks for them that they won't have him back. So I had Columbus in five. I'm not sure what you had for that.
I had Tampa in seven.
Oh.
So okay. Once again, well, the Clappercast pick is right.
Yeah. Ready? Got the one of us has the number of games, one of us has teams. That's how it works. We can't go wrong that way.
Nope.
So next up we had Boston and Carolina. This was a lot shorter of a series than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I'm honestly disappointed in Carolina because they basically just had a repeat of last year. Like it's the exact same issue. They had nothing going on. They got completely overwhelmed by Boston. They were weak on pucks. They were doing that one hand on the stick floating around thing and just not pressuring anyone, and that's not their game. So I don't know what happened, but I fully expected them to be able to step it up a bit and learn from last year, but they didn't.
I didn't watch much of this one, but I just saw, you know, highlights and stuff, and it's weird for Carolina because they came in so hot just like last year and then, yeah, just switched it up. It looked like a different team. So I don't know what happened. What do you think you can pinpoint that down to? Just is there something Boston's doing or is it something that Carolina isn't doing?
I feel like a lot of it is probably in the Boston end because, like, we've talked at length about them before, just how good of a team they are and how they can dominate and how smart they are on the ice. So I feel like it's just Boston being able to overwhelm teams in that way. Like, I think I mentioned this in the text to you that Boston brings out the Toronto and everybody where they can just completely take control of a series of a matchup and dominate in whatever way they need. That being said, like, there's probably a lot of it on Carolina for failing to adapt and failing to learn from last year.
I thought Boston might not look as impressive without Tuukka Rask in the net, but Jaroslav Halak's doing a fine job.
Oh, yeah. No, they got one of the best tandems in the league, and Halak is more than capable of carrying that team for a little bit.
Yeah, he's doing really well. So I originally had Boston in seven, and you had Carolina in five.
Correct.
So, again.
Once again.
We had the Clappercast
pick is right.
And then moving along, I guess, unless there's anything else you wanted to mention about that series, we have Washington and the New York Islanders. So I'm a bit disappointed about this, but overall happy in what happened as a result of it. So Washington got bumped off. They did not, except for one game, they did not play their game. They looked so disinterested and so lazy and undisciplined and just all over the place. They were down by two in one game and like 5 minutes left in the third and they just iced the puck. It's just no heart. Just they weren't into it. And I think we've seen that team be super motivated and just willing to do whatever it takes to win. And they just didn't get even close to that. It was so frustrating.
Do we need to start questioning Alex Ovechkin's leadership?
Yeah, now that he's won a cup, is he is he content at where he's at? Shout out to Ovi for getting on NHL 21. Is that the first time ever a player's been on two?
I'm trying to think back. I don't remember the cover athletes.
He was on what, 08 or 07 or something?
07. I feel like one cover that had like Chicago players after they won again, but I can't remember if that was like a special edition or just a theory or something.
Okay. Nevertheless, kudos to him. I'm sure that's not what he really wanted out of this
consolation
season,
prize,
but pretty cool, I guess. Yeah. However, like I was saying, Capitals just looked like shit, and the Islanders looked great. To be fair, the Islanders.
The Islanders are the new Devils and Minnesota Wild. Like that's the modern version of that style of play.
Yeah.
So they're going to be well equipped to handle almost anything.
still doesn't make sense why they didn't, why the Washington Capitals didn't pay Barry Trotz. I don't think he was looking for anything outlandish, but the Capitals just aren't one of the teams that likes to pay a head coach a lot.
Yeah, this is a trend that they've had throughout their whole history, is like most of their coaches, with the exception of bringing Trotz in, have been like first-time coaches or like guys who don't have that winning experience or winning pedigree elsewhere. It's just rookie coaches, promote from within, cheap options.
Yeah, first-time NHL head coaches. And they've said, we want to hire an experienced NHL head coach, in the press conference. Lucky, there's a few that are available that are good, and there's a few that are available that are not so good. So I'm hoping that that's not what ends up happening, is they bring in someone who sucks.
The three names I've heard the most are Gallant, Laviolette, and people are throwing Babcock's name in there as an option. I don't know if that's like an actual, they're talking to Babcock, or if that's just media throwing his name in there for something to do.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I don't know how that would work, having Babs coaching the Capitals.
I think it's too soon.
Ovechkin played 10 minutes a night? Sure.
Ovechkin he's only going to be deployed on the power play. That's it. No even strength time.
Yeah. I would love if Gerard Gallant gets the job. That would be amazing. I think he would really work well with the team that's there. But this team's going to make a lot of changes in the offseason because they have to. Holpe's a UFA. That significantly changes the look of this team. Samsonov is recovering from an injury. Apparently it's going well, but if it's not, maybe they have to look at bringing in another goalie. Someone cheaper than Holtby. I was hoping that might be Jacob Markstrom, just because I love Markstrom and I love the Capitals, but I think he's going to be up there as well.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to bring in a goalie, maybe. At least a backup. There's a few other guys that are up for contracts, so what happens there with the coaching change? There's a lot of change that could be happening in Washington. But we'll see. But for the Islanders, an impressive series. Very impressive. Anthony Beauvillier was having a great playoffs.
He was my standout player as well.
Pretty quietly having a really amazing playoffs. I was kind of thinking about this after, you know, the loss. I was like, I really don't have any ill will towards the Islanders. It's not like I hate those guys, you know, I want to meet them again in playoffs and beat the hell out of them. It's like, well, they're a good team. They have a former coach. He's a very good coach. I love Barry Trotz. Kudos to them. Like, that's all you can really say is good job. You outplayed us. You outcoached us.
Absolutely.
Our team just sucked. Your old defensive coach sucked.
For Washington in that series, they had, I think it was 8 goals in 5 games. Only 3 players had a goal and only 7 players had a point, which is... that is like unacceptable from a team, from an offensive team like Washington, but from any team in general, because that's basically Arizona levels of bad.
It was very frustrating and disappointing to watch. So like I said, like, it's not I hate the Islanders for beating a hard fought series. I hate the Capitals right now for not even trying, because it looked like it on the ice. It just looked so bad. I think TJ Oshie was the only guy who was playing every shift hard, which is why he's so beloved by Capitals fans. Aside from the Capitals, I don't want to get too bogged down in them. Semyon Varlamov had a really good series in net for the Islanders. So props to him. But this is just our old coach defeated us. He's a better coach, so sucks. I'm over it.
Yeah, not much you can do at this point. It's like, it's not even worth getting mad over. It wasn't like it was a hard-fought, close series, controversial or anything. It was just, they were just better.
I think this was also for the Islanders. It was like the first time since the 80s that they've gone into the second round back-to-back.
That sounds likely, because they were really mediocre for a lot of years.
Yeah, they've kind of recovered from the Milbury era, and let's not even get into him. Not even worth it. And then I had Washington in six. I had Washington in six. You had the Isles in six. So the Clappercast pick wasn't right in this case. So anyway, last series we had Philly versus the Montreal Canadiens, and Carey Price was not able to steal this series.
Carey Price got out Carey Price by Carter Hart.
Yes. Hart for Hart.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, Montreal was like advanced stats darlings through this series because they were actually expected to win if you're looking at like expected goals and stuff like that throughout the series. But they couldn't beat Carter Hart. They got shut out two straight games. And I mean, when you're going into a game three tied 1-1 and you get shut out in games three and four, you know, that's going to kill you no matter what the advanced stats say about how you're performing.
Yeah, Montreal had like, they looked like the better team in a few of those games. They looked, especially
oh, yeah.
in
they,
the game
they battled hard.
In. They were,
yeah.
They were amazing. They just ended up not being able to score enough goals. So what happened to, or what they did to Pittsburgh in the first round kind of happened to them in this round. And it's kind of cool for Carter Hart because he is, like, his idol growing up was Carey Price. So, you know, match up against your idol
and beat him in a playoff round.
So, Philly, I mean, anything else to say about them?
No, they just have a solid team and they're clicking and firing on all cylinders right now. That they were strong. So it'll be... They're up against the Islanders in the second round here, and that's going to be a hard one for them. We were just talking about the Islanders with their system and the way they play. It's going to be a hard matchup for them, so it'll be interesting to see.
So that one I had Philly in five. I don't know what
I had Philly in six.
Having. All right, well, I had six out of eight teams, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I had five in that round.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
75%.
Not bad for picking names out of a hat.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that brings us to second round. So the matchups are Vegas versus Vancouver, Colorado versus Dallas, Philly versus the New York Islanders, and Boston versus Tampa Bay Lightning. So let's start in the West. Let's give some quick predictions now that we're one game into each of these.
Or if you're hockey reference
today.
Too.
Yeah. So for Vegas
a weird thing
Vancouver.
On hockeyreference.com earlier was that the Tampa Bay, Boston, and Colorado Dallas series is we're already tied at 1-1 and we're recording. I mean, neither of those games have been played yet, so might
yeah,
be conspiracy brewing here.
Yeah. So for Vegas versus Vancouver, they've played one game. Vegas won well, like 5-0, 6-0, something like that. Basically just all Vegas, all game. Vancouver was kind of playing like the rough game. Like they started it. It was very weird. Like why would you...
Yeah, they know how they succeed and then they go and try and do something else. Like I get you need to adapt or die, but they don't really have the people in place to do that. I mean, Antoine Roussel is only so good at it. And he got completely defeated by Reeves.
He got dimed for hugging him, which was weird.
Yeah.
But I guess he was probably warned by the referee to, you know, shut up. And
yeah,
he probably didn't. So he got dimed, sat down. Yeah, it was just weird. Like, why start that game that's not your strength, right? Like, you can beat them in a different way. That's Vegas is a fast, big team that's got a lot of guys that can do a lot of damage, so that's not the way to take it. So Vegas took game one. I'm picking Vegas in six. That's my prediction.
I've got Vegas in five. Yeah, I've got my picks recorded. Yeah, it'd be hard to see them not put up a fight. I just don't know if they'll be able to get the chances and the offense they need to overpower what Vegas can do defensively, especially with Vegas's depth being able to shut down both of Vancouver's offensive lines, like no questions asked.
Yeah. Yeah. They really targeted those small D men. Like I mentioned, Quinn Hughes and Troy Stetcher just getting annihilated, taking advantage of the small size with those giant forwards that they have, taking every opportunity to hit them and, you know, make it tough for them.
I mean, that's basically how Vancouver overpower St. Louis was getting the momentum really early on. So Vegas goes in, and I mean, they can counter Vancouver trying to be physical very quickly and very easily, and they grab the momentum very early on in this series, kind of seeing and mimicking what Vancouver tried to do in the past, and like, now we'll do this instead this time.
I think Vancouver's got to have a better game plan coming into game two. They have Tyler Toffoli and Tyler Myers sound like they might be able to make it into this series if it's long enough. But just the speed at which we're going through these series, I don't know if they'll have enough time. Like, it's just going so fast. So yeah. If they get those in, all the Tylers, if they assemble all the Tylers, they'll be okay. They've got Tyler Mott, Tyler Graevac, Tyler Myers, Tyler Toffoli. There's probably a few other Tylers, so Team Tyler.
Someone's probably got like a middle name of Tyler as well.
Probably, yeah. So yeah, I'm going Vegas in six. I think Vancouver, if they get some more special team opportunities and they play their game and Markstrom plays well, they'll take a couple, but I think Vegas is just too strong for them. Like, Vancouver's looked impressive, but I just don't think that they're there yet. And I should mention, too, because I love him so much, Jacob Markstrom, game one, not his fault at all.
Just got to throw that out there.
Yeah. Yeah, got to support my boy. Okay, so yep. next up is probably the most exciting matchup in the round two is Colorado and Dallas. I'm the most excited about this.
I have to
this.
Agree.
I unfortunately wasn't able to watch
this. This is our cup picks.
Yeah, this is me and you battling it out, really. I wasn't able to watch game one. I had a wedding to go to this weekend. Not mine, but somebody else's. and I couldn't watch during the ceremony on my phone and feel okay about it, so I didn't.
You're just sitting up there in like the front row or something on your phone the whole time.
Yeah. So Dallas ended up taking game one. I hear it was a really good game. I'm looking forward to being able to watch the rest of that series. I picked Colorado in seven. It was a really hard pick for me.
This surprised me, actually.
I don't want them to. I would prefer Dallas, but I think Colorado is just, they're just rolling. They're rolling on all cylinders. I do think it's going to be a close series, though, but I think just the offense in Colorado is just going to be too much for Dallas. I think it's probably going to be a high-scoring series, and I think Colorado is better and more consistent at scoring more goals than Dallas is.
That's a good point. I was honestly, like, I've got Colorado in seven as well, but as I kind of saw how Dallas came and took over the Calgary series, I started almost leaning towards kind of like Dallas might actually be able to pull this off because they have the offensive weapons, and especially if Haskinen's going to be an absolute beast and drive the team's play. But I ultimately stuck with Colorado's because I had that before game one even happened. So that's where I kind of fell. But yeah, no, that's big for you to go against your cup pick in this series, actually.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I want Dallas to go all the way. Just because I like their game. Colorado is just so strong. I think whoever wins this is probably going to be one of the favorites to win the cup. Although, yeah, whoever wins this, and if Vegas wins against Vancouver, that's going to be a crazy matchup as well.
That'll be a fun-to-watch series.
Yeah.
I mean, Vegas against anybody is usually a pretty good battle, so.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, I was thinking you were going to pick Dallas, and we were going to go against our cup picks. nope, just me. I would be okay with either of these teams winning just because they're both exciting to watch.
Yeah.
In my opinion, anyway. I know Dallas has their moments, but they've been fun this playoff run. Okay, so then in the East, we've got Philadelphia and the Islanders. I've picked Philly in six. I really don't have anything to go on for that. I just kind of picked for this one.
Honestly, yeah, I took Philly in seven. I think the Flyers are the one of the teams that's going to be able to overpower what the Islanders are setting up, especially over a longer series. It's going to be very close, and the Islanders are going to be hard to beat. I would not be the least bit surprised if New York somehow managed to win in like 4 or 5, just because they can shut Philadelphia down so well. And watching even just the first period of Game 1 before we record this, you can kind of see that even though Philly was getting a ton of good chances, especially Travis Konechny, the Islanders were really good at not letting those chances hit the net, at driving just enough, or having just enough defensive awareness to tip a pass just a couple of inches, or, you know, push a guy who's got a cross-crease pass just far enough wide so that he's not going to hit the net. So that's going to be where the Islanders are probably going to find their way to succeed, but I think Philly is ultimately the better team in the longer series.
Yeah, the Islanders are just really excel at taking up the lanes. They're really good at that. Just getting the stick in the lane, getting the body in the lane, and just they got like the buy-in of the whole team. It just seems like everybody on that team is willing to sacrifice and make it happen. So I mean, it really could go either way. I ultimately, I guess, thinking about it now, went with Philly because I like Carter Hart. I think he's, if it comes down to goaltending, I like his odds of winning that. And Philly just seems like they've got a bit more of a scoring touch, but if the Islanders shut it down, it could go their way too. So we'll see. I really think all of these games in the second round are going to be long. I think they're going to be hard-fought battles.
Well, the second round the last few years has been kind of the highlight of the playoffs, where you get these big matchups like Colorado-Dallas, New York-Philly, Tampa Bay-Boston, like
Winnipeg.
These are the big teams, big name teams. Yeah, Winnipeg-Nashville. Washington-Pittsburgh every other year.
Yeah, just the battle of the playoffs.
I just had to throw that in there.
It's like a mini playoffs, like a mini Stanley Cup is the second round. Like for the next series here, for Boston versus Tampa Bay, I've got Boston in 7. I think, again, long series. They're both offensively talented. Yeah, so did we really just pick all the same teams?
Except for Colorado. Oh, yeah, we did.
Oh, okay.
I still had your cup pick of Dallas in my mind, so I was about to say, no, we flipped on that one, but no, you flipped to Colorado, so no, we got all the same teams, just different games.
It was a hard one for me to do. I really wanted to go Dallas, but I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Although if they do, I'll be really happy. Like, I just, on paper, I think that Colorado gets it. Boston versus Tampa Bay, two offensively gifted teams. I think Vasilevsky's probably a better goalie, but he's been letting in some weird goals here. So I don't know. It's going to be a long series, I think, for all of these. It's just, I could really see all of these except for Vegas, Vancouver going either way.
Honestly, that's fair. I mean, with Tampa Bay, Boston, it's like, these are the beasts of the East.
Yeah.
I personally have a bit more faith in Boston, their style, their roster, than I do in what Tampa has. But that being said, I mentioned Tampa kind of addressed one of the main holes in their roster over the last offseason, and this could be when they finally actually break through, because they have the depth and the play style to be able to succeed in the playoffs. It's just a matter of, like I mentioned before with Boston, how they can adapt their style of play and dominate almost any team. That I think they ultimately have the advantage in that regard. But Tampa Bay now might have the roster to be able to at least match up against that and just squeak away a couple of wins here and there, or a couple of goals here and there.
Yeah, I mean, they played that close series against Columbus where, you know, it was a lot of one goal games. But for Boston, I think out of all the teams in the league, I would put the most faith in Boston to come back in any sort of game. They seem to have that ability to just turn, like flip a switch and like, we're going to win this game. You saw that against Carolina in, I think was it the elimination game?
I believe so.
They were down and then...
Yeah, because it started with that play when Reimer went out to challenge the puck and DeBrusk crashed the net and scored. And that started the complete snowball effect of them losing their game.
Yeah, they were able to just turn it around. And they've done that consistently, like, throughout the season, last year's playoffs, where they're just you know, we're still in this. At any point, we're still in it. We can come back. We've done it before. We've got a lot of trust in a lot of our players. We trust our goalie. Great leadership. We've got Chara, Bergeron, Krejci, just a lot of guys who've been around the block for a while.
Some exciting players team. Who can turn things around, like Pastrnak and Kasha, and Jake DeBrusk is a name I really want to throw in there because he just has it when it comes to
big goals.
You know, swinging momentum, having a big goal, having a strong play just to give the team some energy and some life.
And Brad Marchand, like, he's not everybody's favorite cup of tea, but he's there for big moments. Like, he got that breakaway goal against the Hurricanes in that game. He's just, he knows where to be and knows how to score. Just don't give him a penalty shot. Skates by the puck.
Let's never forget that one.
Yeah.
That's going to be in his Hall of Fame induction video if he gets there.
Yeah. I think Boston just, you know, the intangibles, I guess, maybe put them over the edge for me. But like I said, all of these, I think, are going to be close series. I think Vegas probably, if any of these teams were to walk away with it, I would see them doing that. I have a little bit of faith in Vancouver, but Vegas is just so strong. I don't know.
Yeah. The on paper looking at the roster overpowers the faith.
Any standout players in the first round that we failed to mention that you want to bring up, or any storylines at all?
One last special shout out for Nick Suzuki. That guy's going to be an absolute stud. Ooh. For Montreal. Offensively talented, like the plays he was making, the puck control he has, but even defensively he was quite sound, and he was matching up against some stronger matchups against Philly there, so that's going to be a really, really good player for them.
Yeah, and similarly, Jesperi Kotkaniemi was also
he bounced back,
good playoffs. I mean, yeah, he had his struggles during the regular season and played in Laval, but those two guys played top two centers, so that's tough to do at any time, especially in playoffs. So, and they both performed and got points, so that's impressive to see. That Pacioretty trade is looking really good for Montreal.
Yeah, no, that worked out really well for them.
I think Thomas Tatar has been kind of a bit of a fan favorite. I'm trying to think here if there's any other players that failed to mention at all. I think that's pretty much it. One more note for Colorado and Dallas is that it's going to be fun to watch Miro Heiskanen and Cale Makar in the same game.
Yeah, battle of two of the best young defenders in the league. That's going to be a good matchup.
What about this, Sean? If Vegas loses to Vancouver, so Vancouver makes it through, Colorado makes it through, then you have Quinn Hughes versus Cale Makar. Man. Then we can finally answer the question of who's better.
We can finally get them on the ice in, you know, a length or longer series, longer period of games at the same time.
If that was a real series, I'm picking Colorado in four, though.
I don't disagree with you.
It kind of seems like Vancouver's a bit of the odd team out here.
Well, it's like they're the underdog. They were my dark horse pick to make a run anyways, but they're the underdog out of all of this, that they're just kind of getting by on that random youthful energy.
That's not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
It's not a bad thing, right? Like, it's great for the franchise that they're making this deep of a push. Like, nobody would have thought that they would be where they are right now. So it's impressive, and it's similar to what we're talking about with Columbus. You know, there's a silver lining no matter what happens. There's no expectation. There's like, if they lose, okay, whatever. But if they win, it's like, wow, that's super impressive. So I think that's a good place to be, and especially for, you know, these players, a lot of these players on the team, first exposure to playoff hockey. That's about as relaxed a environment that they can be in.
And that'll be great for them as they continue through this rebuild here, when they've got their players getting some of this experience already. So it's like the core that's going to come in that they build around is going to have just that little bit, that little taste to kind of give them, you know, give them a taste of the action, then kind of what they want or what they need to work towards, that they can you know, develop it throughout the rest of the system and
give them enough to be hungry for more. And, you know, if they become a true contender, they've got the experience from the first or second round, a few seasons that they're ready to make a deeper push. So if they can make it past Vegas, that's awesome. But like I said, if not, there's a lot that they can take out of this.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I think that wraps things up here for this week on ClapperCast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our show on any podcast platform, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Player FM. To keep up to date with the latest content, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at ClapperCast Media or on Twitter at ClapperCast. You can start the conversation of how your team or your bandwagon team is doing on social media there. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back soon with more NHL playoff coverage.